pledge online at kpfa.org. We're going to turn it over to Flashpoints. Forgive me for my coughing. Thank you all. Big Mike and Dennis, y'all take it away. Peace out.
KPFA, KPFB, Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno.
Flashpoints. Remembering Robert Perry with former high-level CIA analyst Ray McGovern, we'll talk about the Iran-Contra cover-up and how Perry was drummed out of the mainstream press corps after breaking the story about the CIA's collaboration with terrorists and drug traffickers to overthrow the Sandinista government, among other things. I'm Dennis Bernstein, all this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is a fundraising special, and we are remembering Robert Perry, and we are anxious to have you join us and support this radio station and this network. We had a beautiful, long-standing relationship with Robert Perry, old friend of mine, working with him from the very beginning of the founding of ConsortiumNews.com. It was Ray McGovern. A year ago to the day that the late Robert Perry wrote his last piece, and it was a doozy about the state of journalism. What are your thoughts a year after? He is certainly sorely missed as we see the bankrupt nature of mainstream reporting and the willingness for these folks to devote everything, all resources to, in the beginning, build Trump up. Now it's take him down and forget about their responsibility as journalists to tell the truth about what's going on in Washington and the rest of the world. Your thoughts?
Thanks, Dennis. First of all, I would say, let's take Trump down. I mean, I'm all in favor of that.
We want that.
Yeah, I have a kind of quaint or obsolete notion that the truth should not be distorted just to take someone down. For God's sake, isn't there enough already out there? The fact that my 9 grandchildren are not going to have clean air or clean water when they get to be my age, if they make it. I mean, isn't that enough? But, you know, Bob Perry and I, and I shared this with Bob, and I'm proud to say that, we had this thing about journalism, and journalism was to be fair and balanced, and it was not to be perverted for some political aim. And as we watched all through last year, that is 2017, and even before, as we watched the mainstream media, it just fallen in chorus with this Russiagate thing. Well, we thought we could complain. We thought we could explain it pretty easily. I mean, it was, after all, a convenient way of explaining why Hillary Clinton lost. I mean, it couldn't have been that, you know, that she was quite able all by herself without any Russian help to snatch defeat out of victory, out of the vote jaws of victory. And it couldn't be that she didn't campaign in the right place. It had to be something else, and so was the Russians. Now, as we watched things progress, and we saw that the relationship with Russia was getting even worse, and that the arms producers and traders were making hay out of all this, all of a sudden, exactly 1 year ago, and I remember it well, the 12th of December, so yesterday year, Bob called me, and we had both just read the email exchange, not email, but the text exchanges between Peter Strzok, deputy head of the counterintelligence in the FBI, and Lisa Page, a high-level lawyer who worked for the deputy director of the FBI. And they're exchanging these messages showing that they did everything they possibly could to make sure that Trump didn't win, and then, after he won, doing everything to destroy him. Now, Bob called me and said, Ray, did you see this? I said, yeah. He said, you read this the way I do? And we discussed it, and of course, and I said, yeah, I do. And then I thought he was going to say, maybe, Ray, would you write some tonight? But I knew kind of in my heart of hearts that since he had already written three articles earlier in December, the first 2 weeks, on what was going on, that this would be the cream on the top of the coffee or whatever you say. And so he said, I'm going to do this. And sure enough, a year ago exactly today, came his last substantive piece. And of course, it exposed what was going on and showed that the deep state had a deep, deep interest in hiding how they had collapsed. Yeah, had there been interference in the election, they sure as hell had. It was right there in those text messages. But it was the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the CIA that were doing all they possibly could to make sure that Trump lost, and then after he lost, to disable him. So that came out. Now, that day, the New York Times had a completely different thing, which missed the whole point. My point is simply this, that Bob faced into it. He gently led the reader to understand that it was the right things that we had said before, but besides that, now we have textual proof, you know, documentary proof that there was a deep state effort to make sure that Trump didn't win, and that indeed was quite sufficient to lead to the Russiagate trope. Now, what happened was 2 weeks later, so he wrote that on the 13th, and as I say, that was the last substantive piece he wrote. On the 24th, Christmas Eve, he had a stroke. Now, as he didn't want to ruin the celebrations for his family, so he didn't let on. He just said, I'm having cerebral trouble hearing. I have trouble seeing, you know. Well, turns out he went to the doctor and said, well, you had a stroke, you know, and that's why you can't see, or you can't see clearly. Well, it eased up just a little bit, enough for him to struggle mightily to write his own apology, typical Bob, an apology for not writing more articles from the 13th of December till Christmas Eve. And so on New Year's Eve, he apologized for that and said, look, you know, I had a stroke, and I just want to tell you that it may be from doing a lot of extra time and writing these things, but I think it's mostly, in all seriousness, it's mostly due to what he called the unrelenting ugliness that has become official Washington and national journalism, and this was a factor. And sure it was. You know,
And let me just jump in there. I just want to remind people we're talking about Robert Perry. He's the founder of Consortium News, really the first serious internet magazine, investigative magazine. But Robert Perry, he was the journalist. He broke the Iran-Contra scandal. Robert Perry was the reporter who, as soon as that 15-year-old with that Russian weapons launcher shot down Hasanfas over Nicaragua, it was Bob Perry that was there taking down the serial numbers of the freaking plane and tracking this CIA plane, if you will, back to a connection with the media, with the drug cartels. In other words, it was one of the unraveling parts of the decision by the United States government, the Central Intelligence Agency, Oliver North, to get in bed with drug traffickers to overthrow the Sandinista government. That's just one story. Robert Perry was drummed out of the mainstream press because he was so good that his stories would make people in those high offices there where you used to work, Ray, make them very nervous and yell at Bob's editors for, you know, screwing things up. And Bob's editors would come back and scream at Bob and say, you know, you're screwing our access up to these important people. And Robert Perry's response is, that's the idea, right? Right?
Yeah, you know, Dennis, I'm laughing through tears here because I was in the vice president's office, Vice President George H.W. Bush, the morning after Hasanfus's plane was shot down. So I saw this from a completely different vantage point. Now, I can't tell you exactly the exchange that I heard in those days, because I didn't know diddly about Hassenfuss. I was, you know, I was substantive guy. The operations people briefed Bush through their own channels. But there I was, and of course, reading Bob in the press, I figured out what was happening. But, you know, it was, I think maybe to show you what Bob ran into, I'll repeat a vignette that he told me, and he gave me permission to spread this around. Okay, it's during Iran-Contra, right? And he gets this job in Newsweek, and he's a sort of all of a sudden a part of the Ahoy Aristoi. You know, he's sort of like he's made it, okay? And so he's sitting at this little dinner with about 12 other people, very important people. There's a congressman from Wyoming named, what was it, Cheney, and there's a former National Security Advisor, Scowcroft, and there's like, so all of a sudden, as Bob explains it, he's having a shrimp cocktail. He said, really good shrimp. He said, okay. He said, all of a sudden, Scowcroft, who had just quit being the National Security Advisor to George H.W. Bush, or to Reagan, he says, apropos of nothing, you know, Admiral Poindexter, my deputy, is to testify to Congress on Wednesday with respect to how much we told the president about, you know, Iran-Contra, and so if he were asking my advice, I would tell him we never told Reagan anything. Now, Bob knew better, of course, and he explained, he dropped his fork onto a plate, almost broke it, and everybody looked at him, and without thinking, he said, General Scowcroft, do I understand that you would ask your former deputy to perjure himself before the Senate? Now, there was this moment of unbelief, disbelief, about 30 seconds, right? And then the head of Newsweek put his arm around Bob. And you know what he said? And this speaks volumes. He said, now, Bob, sometimes we have to do what's best for the country, end quote. Oh, ho, 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 ho. All the laughter, all men laughed, there were all men there, all manly laughter about, we know what's best for the country, sometimes you have to lie to Congress because it's best for you. It was just so poignant, and Bob would never tell that story, but I tell it whenever
And that was really sort of the beginning of the end of his corporate career. Ray McGovern, we're out of time, and there's a lot more to remember about Robert Perry, but I want people now to hear Robert Perry in his own voice, in his own words, and we have, I have put together this 10-hour recollection. We have also, when in early 90s, I did an extensive debriefing of Bob, and we're going to share some of that and make that available to folks who want to support Free Speech Radio. But I wanted to play for the folks this appearance that Bob Perry did when Gary Webb was breaking the Dark Alliance series, in which he was expanding on the relationship between the U.S. government, the CIA, drug traffickers, and the flow of cocaine into Los Angeles. And so this is a sound from an event at the, I think it was called the Midnight Special Bookstore in Los Angeles. It's with Bob Perry and Gary Webb. Gary Webb, before he became sort of the persona non grata of the mainstream press, and was shredded because the corporate press didn't do the story that both Gary and Bob put their careers on the line for. Let's listen to this.
I'm Bob Perry. I've been a reporter for a lot of years now. I grew up in a newspaper family. My dad ran a paper in Massachusetts, which is how I got into the business. And I worked for the Associated Press for a lot of years. And the Associated Press, as you probably know, is a major wire service, very straight in how it deals with stories, very just the facts, ma'am, kind of place. Tends to be a little timid, but has a certain amount going for it, in this, at least the lack of spin that it often would not put on stories. And while at the Associated Press in Washington, I was assigned to what was called the Special Assignment Team. And my job there began about the time that the Reagan administration did. I was given that appointment in December of 1980. And as part of the work I did, I focused on Central Intelligence. I focused on William Casey and Central America, covering it from Washington, primarily, how the policies were developing. And that led us to a number of stories over the first few years of the decade. Many were very tough stories, stories about gross human rights violations that were occurring in that region. And efforts by the U.S. government to contain, cover up many of those atrocities. From the El Mazote massacre, where more than 800 people, men, women, and children, were slaughtered in El Salvador, and then the U.S. government tried to hide that fact from the American people, and did so for about 10 years. But those stories led me to a very interesting character I met in 1983 named Oliver North, who was on the National Security Council and a rising star. And I kept an eye on North because he seemed so out of control. But he really was, in many cases, following orders. I mean, it was more like the entire White House was getting out of control during that period. So as we follow these stories, and they included stories like this, the CIA assassination manual, which I wrote in 1984, there were stories about secret battles that actually occurred between CIA helicopter units and the Sandinistas inside Nicaragua, which I wrote in December of 84. These stories led us to I was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in 85, but we didn't get it. And the bureau chief, or the then executive editor of the AP, Walter Mears, took me aside in New York one day and said, "Tell me the story that will get us the Pulitzer. I want to go back for it next year." And I said, "Well, the story, I think, is about this guy named Oliver North who's running a secret war from the National Security Council staff in Central America. That's a pretty good story. That could win us the Pulitzer." So Mears said, "Okay, go at it." And we hired Brian Barger, who was then a freelancer. And the two of us began to write stories beginning in June of 85 about Oliver North's network, including the first story that mentioned him. Then, as the fall went on, and as basically the rest of the media was paying very little attention to our work, we began to hear from the Contras and from Contra supporters that a number of the Contra units had become involved in narcotics trafficking as a way to raise money, and because of the people that were being brought into the program by the White House. We knew at that point, this is fairly early on, that Manuel Noriega, who was recruited by the White House to help the Contras, was involved in narcotics trafficking. We knew from talking to the Contras and their supporters, as well as DEA people, that there were serious problems with a number of the Contra units, especially in Costa Rica. At that time, our focus was on the southern front in Costa Rica, although we're hearing similar things about the northern front in Honduras. So in December of 85, Barger and I went down to Miami. A few months earlier, a former Panamanian health official named Hugo Spatafora had gone to the U.S. Embassy, gone to the Drug Enforcement Administration in San Jose, Costa Rica, and told them that the Contras were getting involved in drug trafficking. He'd witnessed it, that Noriega was involved, and they should take action. The head of the DEA office said to him, "Your allegations are not specific enough. We're not going to pursue them." This was in September of 1985. And the head of the DEA in the office in Costa Rica then was Bob Nieves. A couple of days later, Spatafora decided he would go and blow the whistle, and he took a bus heading down to Panama, where he was planning to denounce Noriega and the Contras for drug trafficking. The bus was stopped by Panamanian soldiers at the border. He was allowed to proceed a little bit further in the bus, and then it was stopped again. And officials took him off the bus, and he disappeared. His body, his decapitated body, was found the next day near a riverbank in Costa Rica. And we had talked to, Barger and I had talked to some of his family members in Miami as part of our Contra drug investigation. And after our time in Miami, where we found more and more evidence that there indeed had been serious problems, we went down to San Jose, Costa Rica, and met with people at the DEA and people in the Costa Rican government. And the evidence was pretty overwhelming that the Contra units were dealing in drugs, as well as engaged in some fighting, although they seemed to be more interested in the business side of this than the war side of this in many cases. That's what we discovered. And Barger and I then flew back to Washington. And Barger was very excited. He said, we got the story. And I said, well, the hard part is now to come. And the hard part in journalism these days, especially on this kind of a topic, is to get the story into print. And I knew that the AP editors would not be thrilled with what we're coming back with. The pressure in Washington in the 80s was already building. Anytime a reporter found information that was derogatory about the Contras, that reporter and his editors, bureau chief, everybody, could expect to come under severe criticism. There was a special team that had been set up by the National Security Council called the Public Diplomacy Team. And they would literally go to your offices. Otto Reich ran it. The guy who oversaw it day-to-day was Walter Raymond Jr. Walter Raymond Jr. was a 30-year propaganda specialist from the CIA. And he had been transferred by William Casey over to the National Security Council to run this operation. Casey, the head of the CIA, personally oversaw this effort to do what they called, inside their own operation, perception management. The goal of this operation that they ran, we have the documents on now, was to manage the perceptions of the American people on how they would see what was going on in Central America. So that was the context, that you could expect this kind of hard-edged public relations, public diplomacy, propaganda attacks on reporters, editors, and anyone else who got too close to these stories. So AP was very nervous about this, and understandably so. And we thought we had the story very well nailed down. We had a variety of sources, large number of them, and we had them from a variety of positions. Some were inside the Contra operation. Some were supporters. We had people, senior levels of the U.S. government, telling us things about evidence they had. But AP was very nervous. And the story of how that story broke is one of the more curious ones of my time there. And it went this way. We'd gone through a whole lot of editing on this piece. There was a great deal of nervousness. And we finally wrote what I thought was the final version of the story. And I sent it in to the AP General Desk in Washington. And I had the bureau chief's name at the top. It was supposed to go to him for final approval. And I sent it in. And a couple hours later, he calls me into his office. And he says, Bob, he says, I'm sorry, but New York is really concerned about this piece. We don't have any named sources in it. I don't think we can run this piece. He said, but you can go back and try a little harder, you know, see if you can get anyone to go on the record about this. But he said, quite frankly, I don't think you're going to be able to do it. But something strange had happened, because AP is a very large organization with a lot of different elements. And when I had filed the story to the general desk, it had also gone to the foreign desk in New York. And they didn't realize there was a political problem with the story. So the AP foreign desk they translated it into Spanish and sent it out. So without us knowing it. So a couple of days later, Barger got a call from a friend of his who said, that was a great story you guys had in the Caracas Gazette, you know. And Barger said, what are you talking about? And they said, well, you know, the story you guys moved about the Contras and drugs. And I'll never forget the look on Barger's face when he got that phone call. And he came over and said, something strange has happened. And indeed it had. The story had gone out by accident. So I went back into the bureau chief's office and said, well, we've got a problem here. You know, the story that is out, it's in Spanish, but it's out. And the AP decided we better really get cracking, and we did. And we, the next day, we ran a version in English, which is pretty much the same. We had taken out a couple of really sensitive things that we had put in the first story, which didn't end up in the second story, really way out stuff. Like we had reported that Manuel Noriega appeared to have been involved in drug trafficking. If you remember, back in 1985, he was our ally. And so he really couldn't talk about his drug trafficking. It wasn't until later that that became an issue. So, but basically the story ran. The Washington Post waited 1 week, added a few more denials. We had denials in it already. And then they ran it somewhere like on page A26 or something. It got that kind of treatment generally in the mainstream big media. But that sort of was the first piece that sort of broke open this question of the Contras and drugs. And initially, of course, the State Department denied that they had any information, any evidence at all about it. By the spring of 86, the State Department was acknowledging that some of the Contra units were involved in drugs, but not the leaders. That became the line of defense. It wasn't the leaders, it was just some guys. And so we ended up, we also were, of course, continuing pursuit of the Oliver North Network stories, which we were doing again through the spring and summer of 86. There was, I should mention that we came upon evidence that the Miami U.S. Attorney's Office was on to this story as well. They were doing an investigation of Contra illegal arms trafficking out of Miami and narcotics trafficking. This investigation we wrote about on April 11th or 12th of 1986. Immediately after that, Ed Meese, who was then Attorney General, goes down to Miami and talks to the U.S. Attorney, whose name was Leon Kellner. And even though the FBI team and the line prosecutor, a man named Jeffrey Feldman, thought they had a case they were building, thought they were getting more and more evidence, when they bring that information forward Feldman puts it together in a prosecutorial memo which says, we should go to a grand jury with this evidence. That is brought to his superiors, who initially say, yeah, this is a great memo. Then later, when he leaves the room, they get together and they rewrite the memo to say there's no evidence here. It would just be a fishing expedition. And without going back to him, they sign his name to it and send it up to Washington, where it is then immediately leaked to the Washington Times to discredit the stories about Contra drug trafficking. It's also used by the Republicans in the Senate to attack John Kerry, the Democratic senator from Massachusetts, who was pursuing these same allegations. It had been investigated, and it wasn't true. So that's where it stood until the Iran-Contra scandal breaks in the fall of 86. Again, as much as I'd like to say that the Washington Press Corps did its job then, it was really a kid who shot down a plane in Nicaragua that did most of the work. And a magazine in Beirut, Lebanon, of all places, which stood up for freedom of the press, when those of us in Washington weren't doing much of a job on that at all. The problem we then faced with the Iran-Contra scandal immediately was an effort to contain it. Once the White House had to admit they'd been lying all those months and all those years, they then immediately tried to contain it. In the words of Robert Dutton, one of the operatives, the word was out to build a Chinese wall around Ronald Reagan. And they did it. And they did it partly because the Democrats in the Congress decided that it would be too disruptive to this country, to our political system, to get to the truth. And there were meetings between Jim Wright and Lee Hamilton and others where they decided that it was best to sort of focus this just on Oliver North, say it was essentially a rogue operation, say Ronald Reagan really knew nothing much about this, Bush was clean, and we saw that story develop. And that's pretty much what the House and Senate investigations in 87 said. At the end of that, though, there was the pursuit of this investigation by John Kerry. And John Kerry, although not that he did everything perfectly, was the person who pushed this the hardest. But his investigation encountered constant roadblocks, as his chief counsel, Jack Blum, described in recent hearings on the Hill. There were all kinds of efforts to protect the Contras. And this gets back to the idea of perception management. The administration knew that they had to protect the Contras' image at all costs. There was a phrase that Walter Raymond used in his memos to his underlings. He said, the job is to glue white hats on the Contras and to glue black hats on the Sandinistas. There was no place for gray hats in this business. And that was the game. So whenever a reporter had the misfortune of discovering negative information about the Contras, the reporter had to come under attack, or the investigator, or the member of Congress, or whoever came up with the information. And in that environment, which got worse and worse and worse in Washington as the 80s went on, fewer and fewer people were willing to take those hits. People lost jobs. People lost careers. There was a lot of hard times for people who tried to tell the truth about these issues. And in that context, even when John Kerry came out with a report in the spring of 89, where he describes a lot of what he found about the Contras, that the CIA, that the U.S. government had been involved in giving money to four companies that were supplying the Contras and had been involved in drug trafficking, and that the DEA knew they were involved in drug trafficking when the United States paid them to deliver then called non-lethal or humanitarian supplies to the Contras. That was known. And it also turned out that when Kerry's people asked for an explanation of why is the United States paying money to these drug trafficking outfits, the answer came back, well, Oliver North wanted to maintain the infrastructure, the supply infrastructure, the infrastructure that the Contras had already put in place. So what they were admitting to was that the Contras had built their supply infrastructure around drug traffickers, which makes a certain amount of sense because they have the planes. Noriega was certainly involved with his network. So this is not as far-fetched or as conspiratorial as some people would like to make it. But what happened when Kerry's report came out, and it was a very important report. It not only dealt with the Contras, it dealt with Panama, a country we invaded a few months later. It was the first window into BCCI and that operation. So this very important report comes out. It is mocked in Washington. The Washington Post puts it on page A20 in a 700-word piece, which mostly denigrates it, written by Mike Isikoff. So this was the climate in which these allegations were heard. They were heard in an atmosphere of disdain and fear. Disdain for the information and fear of the consequences if you found the truth. So it went nowhere. And that leads me to a call I got about maybe a year ago now from a guy named Gary Webb. At this point, I had sort of gone from AP to Newsweek. That had not worked out because I kept telling them that we're missing these stories. They didn't like to hear that. So I left Newsweek in 1990, worked for PBS for a while, and I've started my own little publication called The Consortium, and you're welcome to get free copies. I think there's some piled up there at the back, which has been trying to get the documentary evidence on many of these questions and bring it together so people can see their own history, a history that's been taken from us. But about a year ago, I got a call from Gary Webb of the San Jose Mercury News. And he says he's looking into the Contra drug thing. I said, well, that's interesting. And I said, what's your angle? What's your new angle? What do you have that's different? He said, well, he says, I'm really looking at it from the point of view of the impact of the drugs on South Central Los Angeles. And I thought that's kind of a intriguing look, and it's one that I thought we should have done in a way. I admired his insight because we had looked at it from the point of view of what was happening in the field. We were able to document an awful lot of that, but we did not talk about it in terms of its consequences at home. And I think that really is the other side of the story.
And that is, of course, the late Robert Perry talking about aspects of breaking the Iran-Contra. He's at a special event, I guess around 1996 or so, with Gary Webb at the Midnight Special bookstore in Los Angeles. A mighty powerful 1-2 from Robert Perry and Gary Webb. That's part of a 10-hour retrospective. This is a year since we lost Robert Perry. 10-hour retrospective of the work of Robert Perry, which includes interviews about his work with John Pilger. It includes an hour-long radio documentary that I did at Bob's house not long before he died, when they would give the Gary Webb Award each year to a deserving figure in journalism or in moving information. And Oliver Stone won the award, given to him by Robert Perry. So all the folks that were there, very interesting group of people who were there that night. Flashpoints was there. We made a documentary. That's a part of this 10-hour retrospective, $100 contribution, $10 a month. Now, that intersection that Bob Perry left us off at, where Gary Webb picked it up, the reason why it was so important for the federal government to shut down Gary Webb is because he nailed the end game. We had a cocaine crack epidemic that burgeoned out of the 1980s from cocaine coming from Central America. And Gary Webb did investigations that tied the flow of cocaine. You remember Nancy Reagan, Just Say No? That tied the flow of cocaine into Los Angeles and South Central L.A. to the CIA and the U.S. government's covert support for those who were trying to overthrow the Sandinista government. That was just one story. And it's an extraordinary story. Now, you'd think, oh, but that happened then. Well, fast forward, it is interesting that this Mr. Barr that Donald Trump has tasked, if he is confirmed to be the next attorney general, was the same attorney general that George Bush the First, remember the hero who was just being celebrated? This was the same attorney general that worked with George Bush the First when he structured 6 or 7 key pardons for high-level officials of the Reagan-Bush administration who, in fact, participated illegally in subverting the Nicaraguan government. These are felonies. These folks, these high, and we're talking about Weinberger and folks like that. These folks could have gone to jail for a long time. But Bush won with the help of the same attorney general that's going to help your friend Donald Trump. Nobody talked about that. Isn't that interesting that nobody mentioned that? Isn't that interesting that none of your investigative journalists at the networks talked about the fact that Bush won, pardoned 6 high-level officials of his administration? Iran-Contra criminals. Bush was the pardon king. Trump hired the attorney general, wants to hire the attorney general that did the Bush pardons. And where was the press? Where was the press on this? Are they not interested? What I've heard from this press is that this guy, this is a straight shooter, the guy that Trump wants to bring on. He worked with George Bush the First. Yeah, he did. Sure as hell did. You know, when I began to investigate Iran-Contra, one of the first things I discovered was that George Bush as vice president was the key conduit for Oliver North and this illegal operation to overthrow the Nicaraguan government. In my own investigation, I discovered a prison guard who had joined the North Network because he wanted to join the freedom fighters and overthrow the communists in Nicaragua. But he decided he didn't want to do North's mission, which was to sabotage the U.S. ambassador to Costa Rica, attempt to blow him up and blame it on the Sandinistas so they'd have an excuse, the U.S. would have an excuse to invade Nicaragua. So he said, this guy, Jesus Garcia, this prison guard, didn't want to go along with North, wasn't interested in attacking a U.S. ambassador. He said he was willing to kill the Russian ambassador in Managua, but he's not going to kill a U.S. ambassador. Since he said no to the North operation, they set him up on a weapons charge, and he was arrested. What we found in his apartment was a briefcase. In the briefcase was the telephone number of one Donald Gregg, who was the national security advisor for George Bush as vice president. Your hero, George Bush. Everybody's applauding. Now, not me. I remember I investigated Iran-Contra. I saw the incredible suffering that this covert operation that was funded illegally by drugs was causing in Nicaragua to this fledgling government. There was a lot to report. Bob Perry was in the middle of it. He broke the Iran-Contra scandal, and he broke the Contra drug connection. And you know what? They killed the story at AP. In English, they killed it. They thought they killed it. It was only supposed to go out. Bob's first story about Hassanfuss, the plane he was shot down in, the Medellin cartel, the relationship between the CIA and drug traffickers, that was killed by AP. They were only going to run it AP in Espanol, but it accidentally ran in English. And that's why we first saw the story about the CIA in relation to drug traffickers to overthrow the Nicaraguan government. And Gary Webb was destroyed by the corporate press because they missed the story. So instead of being able to pick up on the story about the CIA's involvement with traffickers and its impact in terms of bringing drugs into the country, the corporate press, the Times, the Washington Post, and the LA Times decided to kill Gary's reputation, and from there it was all downhill. But we have this amazing historical package that we can give to you. And the phone number is 1-800-439-5732. Now, we have the 10-hour retrospective for $100. That's $10 a month. You can get I did an interview in 1992, an extraordinary extended interview with Robert Perry, debriefing him on every aspect of Iran-Contra. It's called Uncovering the Scandal. You can get that interview, my extended archival interview with Robert Perry, for $100 contribution or $10 a month. If you want both Perry CDs, you can get them for $150, $15 monthly. Now, if you got some money, and believe me, this is the second to last day of the fund drive, and to say that we are behind is a bit of an understatement. So if you've got a little extra money, we got this incredible Mega Ultra Pack, which you can get. The California Field Atlas, The Immeasurable Place, the book, The Immeasurable Place book, Hypercapitalism, USB 2018 speech back, DVD Dubious Friends, DVD Long Shadow, DVD The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, gear, KPFA Canvas Tote, KPFA Canvas Tote, the whole thing. You get the tote bag and put all the stuff in it for $1,000 contribution. So if you've got a little extra money, we got this huge package which has all kinds of stuff, and it would be a way of you standing up in this second to last day and help us do some catch up on what we have to do here in terms of to stay on the air. So you can get the Mega Ultra Pack for $1,000 contribution. You can get the 10-hour Robert Perry CD retrospective for $100 or $10 a month. If you want, you can get the Greg Palast, David K. Johnston, It's the Worst Than You Think. It's a terrific dialogue between David K. Johnston and Palast for $100 contribution or $10 monthly. All these things are available. I'm honored. I'm proud to have worked with Robert Perry. He was a regular contributor to Flashpoints over our 29-year period. We worked with Bob when Consortium News was still in paper. We were working with Bob, and he was a regular contributor to these airwaves. And we are proud to bring you this historic material, which you will learn a lot about. But again, like I say, this ain't old stuff. We've got history repeating itself, and because the corporate press does not believe in context and history, we never learn what's going on. It's 5:43 in the afternoon. I was given the good news that Darren in Sacramento has given us a $1,000 match. So now every dollar you give us now is doubled. And we would love you to stand up now and help us make a difference. We are at $470, we have three beautiful people on the line, and it's 5:43. 4 in the afternoon. How about by 5:48, we make it to $1,500? Can we make that the next jump? We're at 500 now. Can we get it up to 1,500? Will you stand up? Because this program, Flashpoints, worked with one of the most important journalists of our time. And believe me, Bob Perry, he was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. He won the prestigious George Polk Award. He won the Martha Gellhorn Award. He won the I.F. Stone Investigative Reporting Award. And I think one of his biggest awards was to get thrown out of Newsweek and AP because he wouldn't take crap and he wouldn't shut up. So Bob Perry came to Pacifica Radio and this show, Flashpoints, and we worked with him for 29 years and we lost him last year. But this archive of his work is really quite impressive and worth getting. And you can get it for a $100 contribution. It's doubled, by the way, because we're in a $1,000 match now. But you can get the 10-hour retrospective for $100 or $10 a month. You can get the CD Robert Perry Extended Archival Interview for $100, $10 monthly. Both of them you can get for $150. Incredible material. You can get the Mega Ultra Pack if you have a little extra. And you can get anything separate in the pack. In the pack is the California Field Atlas, The Immeasurable Place, Hypercapitalism. Any one of those are available. California Field Atlas for $250. The Immeasurable Place, $200. Hypercapitalism, $100. USB 2008 Speech Pack, $200. DVD Dubious Friends, $150. DVD Long Shadow, $100. DVD The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, $100. And the gear, the KPFA canvas tote bag to put it all in, $100. And you can get the whole kit and caboodle for $1,000. So if you have a little extra, I would love to see a couple of you. Can I get two of you to come in at the high level? On this, the second to last day on the fund drive, knowing that we are behind, can I get you to stand up? I see three people on the line, and I would like to see a fourth caller at 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732, and you can subscribe at kpfa.org. Hit the pledge button and join us there. kpfa.org. Hit the pledge button and join us there. Three people on the line. I want to know, is there a fourth person? Is there somebody out there that believes that Robert Perry was the right kind of journalist and our relationship with him over 25 years was the right kind of relationship? That you could hear him on a regular basis over these airwaves. And now you can really study his work and the nature of his work and understand why he was one of the most significant investigative reporters of our time, totally overlooked. Okay, 1-800-439-5732 or kpfa.org. Hit the pledge button. There are five people on the line. I do thank you for calling. I do... admit, this is, I wish Bob was still with us. And we miss him in the context of what's going on now. Now, if you think journalism is one, covering one story, Donald Trump, when the world, there are so many things happening in this world that need in-depth coverage. The things that are happening in Yemen, the way in which somebody like the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, can get away with killing
children.
A bill meant to end the support for the mass slaughter and famine in Yemen and then not really get reported because everybody's on Trumpgate. I'm going to say this again. And it's the responsibility of the press. If we do not tell that story in a way that people can see it, then it continues that the Saudis get away with it. It's our job. It's our job. It's not just about Trump. It is not just about Trump. And we, oh my God. I really, there is a traffic jam, as I say, between my brain and my heart. I didn't appreciate the phone call that I got in the office that told me to just sort of shut my mouth and, you know, calm down a little bit. And I can understand why. But this network that I've given, you know, 2/3 of my life to, deserves to continue. This beautiful, scrappy, marvelous free speech network founded in 1949 by people who were willing to go to jail to resist war deserves more than ever now to keep going. Now, I would love to get to see, you can give us $10 or $20 or $30 a month. You can get any of these premiums. I'm not going through the whole list again. You can give us whatever you can give us. I'm asking you to give us your support, to step forward and lock arms with us, as my brother Miguel Gavila Molina likes to say. There's 6 people on the line. In order for me to raise my goal, just to stay where we are, I'm going to need another 6 of you to call immediately. And I'd like to see that happen on the board quickly. 1-800-439-5732. You can get the Robert Perry 10-hour retrospective on CD for $100 contribution. You can get the extended Robert Perry Uncovering the Scandal, my extended interview with him, for $100, $10 monthly. You can get them both for $150, $15 a month. You can get the mega pack for $1,000. You can get whatever you want. You can get all the things in the mega pack are available individually. There's 6 people on the line. It's 5:51 in the afternoon. It's not moving in a way that it really has to move for us to get this going. Is there somebody out there who can step forward for $100 and get a copy of the Robert Perry retrospective and the Robert Perry archival? Get them both for $150. 1-800-439-5732. Can I get you, just a couple of you, to stand up? Those of you who now have a little extra, this would be a good boost moving into our last day if you can jump us up. Do you have $100 a month? That would be terrific. Do you have $5 a month? That would be spectacular. Get the mega pack for a $1,000 contribution, whatever it is. Please call now. There are 9 beautiful people on the line, and I would love to see a 10th and an 11th and a 12th. Step up now where it's time to get in under the Flashpoints wire. Register your support for this radio show, this investigative radio show. Can I get you to call 1-800-439-5732. There are 10 beautiful people on the line, and I'd love to see an 11th person at 5:52 in the afternoon. There's number 11. Thank you. 1-800-439-5732. I would really like to move this along. Can I get number 12? And please be patient. Hang on. Hold on. Be patient. They will get to you. 1-800-439-5732. I'd like to get just about 5 more of you to stand up. You can get the mega pack if you've got a little extra money. You can get the 10-hour CD Robert Perry retrospective for $100 contribution. In that is the our interview with Oliver Stone. Oliver Stone's receiving the Gary Webb Award from Robert Perry. We interview Bob's son, who helped him found Consortium News. We've got John Pilger, and it's an amazing, it really is an amazing retrospective. We're full of information honoring Robert Perry. Right now, we're asking you to honor Robert Perry now and to put your money where your beliefs are. Thank you, Brenda, for doing that. Thank you, Laura, for doing that. 1-800-439-5732. It's 5:54 in the afternoon. 5:54 in the afternoon. We have $770 on the board. We're in the middle of a $1,000 match. We're trying to make our goal of $3,000. 10 callers. It takes a while for you all to get through. Please be patient. Number 11, call up now and join your brothers and sisters on the line and speak up. Step forward. Shout out for Free Speech Radio. 1-800-439-5732. Stand up. Raise a fist for this marvelous canary in the coal mine of corporate disinformation. Please call now. 1-800-439-5732. If you have a little extra, please give a little extra. That would be spectacular. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732, or go to the web and subscribe on the web at kpfa.org. Go to the web and subscribe at the web at kpfa.org. There are 10 people calling now. I'm going up for 15. I'd like to get 5 more of you. It's 5:55. Can I get 5 more of you to stand up right now? Pick up that phone and start to hit it for Free Speech Radio. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. If you have a little extra, please think about picking up the Mega Pack, California Field Guidebook, The Immeasurable Place, Hypercapitalism. You can get the USB, the 2008 Speech Pack, the DVD Dubious Friends, the DVD Long Shadow, the DVD The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. And we have 13 callers on the line. 1-800-439-5732. That number is fluctuating too fast. 1-800-439-5732. We're up to $1,200 on the board with 8 people on the line. And there are 451 people now streaming. Can I get some 454 people streaming now? Can I get some of you streamers to hit it at kpfa.org and join us there? That would be terrific. Miguel, I've been going on and on and on here.
You have to. We have to. We have to raise money. We have a total goal today of 3,000. We're not even halfway there, but you can make it happen. You know, you can get all the things that Dennis has been, you know, mentioning throughout the program here for $25 a week. That's $100 a month. It gives us $1,000 a year. If you can do that, we need a couple of you to make that commitment, because here, Flashpoints, and this station here, KPFA, we're the best free speech that your money can support, and we need that support, especially in these times. December, property taxes have been paid. There's a consumer orgy of just consuming for gift giving, all the holiday dinners, the feasts, the banquets, and there are hundreds and thousands of people homeless, hundreds of thousands of people that aren't going to be able to celebrate these so-called holidays. But help us reach out to those people. We give a voice to the voiceless. We need you now. $25 a week, $100 a month is $1,000 a year. We need you to step up and give us that support. The Green Emerald Empire is bursting right now with festivals everywhere. Some of you out there that are participating are going to be taking part in some of the Emerald Green festivals happening. We need you to commit yourself to what we do here, because we give voice, again, to all of you out there. 1-800-439-5732. Your donation, your pledge is tax deductible. Even your phone call is free. 1-800-439-5732. Me and Dennis believe here. That's why we're in the trenches. That's why we take truth to power. We march, we protest, we participate in vigils and ceremonies that bring those that don't have a voice in this country out to the mainstream by giving them voice.
All right. 1 minute to go. We have $1,500 on the board. We have seven people calling, and it would be nice to get a few more of you to do it. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. I would really love you to stand up right now. I would really be heartened if you call in the context of supporting the work we've done all these years with Robert Perry. 1-800-439-5732. Six people on the line. Was hoping to get just one or two of those big ones. Please call now. 1-800-439-5732. I'm Dennis Bernstein. I've been in here with Miguel Gavila Molina, and I am delighted to turn it back to Mike Biggs.
And this is KPFA, KPFB Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF from Fresno, and online at kpfa.org.